On this show, I'm really excited to talk about a passion of mine that I haven't talked about very often. And it's a new and growing topic that I've been interested in since about 2016, but I'm trying to shift everything over towards that, which you'll hear a lot more about over time. But I'm very excited today to talk to Nurse Chelsea Brown from Canada, who is already doing this in a clinic, and to find out where this whole sector is going to go. So, Chelsea, welcome.
Thank you.
Tell me a little bit. We both got the bug different times, but I think really getting into it was in a circle. Do you want to tell me a little bit about your journey into the wonderful, exciting world of longevity?
My journey actually started long before Inner Circle, and Inner Circle and meeting you and Nicola and thinking about longevity again actually reinvigorated it. And that was back in my first undergraduate when I was studying biology, genetics, biochemistry. And that was when I really started to think about our genetics and inside our body and how we could manipulate that to do a lot of things, not just help ourselves live more vital lives. But that's where it started for me. And I think I sort of got away from that. And then I got into nursing and aesthetics. And it was that Inner Circle that the light switch flipped back on for me. And I was reinvigorated with that and was reminded about the passion that I used to have for understanding genetics and how we can manipulate it, or can we manipulate them? So that was it. We had Dr. Nicola Conlon did the longevity sort of speech at Inner Circle last year. And I remember leaving sort of feeling very quiet and silent. And that is what happens to me when I really start percolating about things. And I left Inner Circle, and for the next couple of months, I could not get it out of my head. And I started reading more books, and I went back to the drawing board. And I don't think I felt this passionate about something in a really long time. And then after I started implementing some things, I went back to the drawing board. I went back to some of my genetics material. I started biohacking, some glucose monitoring, and lost weight. And I did a bunch of things. I started taking the new Cheeto supplement. And as I did all of those things, I couldn't help myself but send you messages and just say, Tim, like, look, this is, I'm doing this. And then we started this little chat back and forth, and it's just like a blossom passion since then. And I actually didn't know how passionate you were about it either, until now we reconnected about it.
Yeah, I think it's been similar for me. It's always been an interest, but the thing that clicked was the measurability of interventions. Mm-hmm. Suddenly, because obviously we all try and do things. You do your exercise and you take your vitamins or whatever, but you never really know if it's doing anything. Mm-hmm. And it was this connection with, firstly, being able to feel different changes is important, but the measurability was key. And suddenly thinking, okay, we've got this epigenetic theory of aging, which is such a beautiful theory. I think it's really explains a lot of stuff, but then also the ability to understand what's behind that and then what interventions might change it, and the fact that you can then measure them. It's the closed loop that made me suddenly click, like, this is huge. This is not some new thing that might work and a couple of tweaks. It's a whole different paradigm. And actually, aesthetic clinics are almost ideally placed because they attract people who are trying to solve this problem, but they don't know what the problem is. I think it's superficial. And the second thing is that for a while, we're going to have a period where governments don't back it from a public health perspective. So who's going to do it? It's going to be the frontline private sector, of which I think medical aesthetic practitioners are a huge part of that.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it wasn't the measurability. I mean, that's how we're able to advance it. But for me at the time, I'm thinking it's probably 13 years ago when I was really looking into the Krebs cycle and how byproducts and what happens when we're not putting energy into our systems and we've got to go in the reverse. And that was when I realized that we actually could possibly have some control we never thought we had. That was the moment for me that we are not programmed to die, essentially. Our genes are not programmed to clean up, yes, but we're not programmed with any type of death genes. And at that time, it created this whole cascade for me to think, okay, well, if that's the case, and we've got this set of, I call it software, how do we hijack and manipulate the software? that was the passion part for me. And then fast forward, there's been research being done behind the scenes that we can measure, we can influence, we can manipulate. And the aha moment I had back then has been coming true. So now that we can measure it, I think that's on that's the more modern part of it. But for me, it was the fact that we have this program. Genes are just a program. And how do we manipulate it? That's where my mind always goes with it. So yeah, been such an interesting journey reading. I've read so many books, and I'm going to enroll in some new education and maybe just take some more education as well back to my genetics background and just remind myself and see what new is coming. But it's the actual reprogramming for me that's the most exciting. The measurement is how we know we can do something about it, but I always kind of felt like I knew we could do something about it, and now it's real, and now I don't feel so crazy thinking that we can do this.
I find that for me, it's the measurement became a motivator to keep going when I was struggling with motivation I don't feel this way about exercise, because exercise makes you feel better on the day as well. So if you do your I always exercise, particularly before kind of anything that involves a lot of thinking or talking. And so that's a motivator. But there are lots of things that you do that, like avoiding sweet things. Like I might feel great if I have something sweet. I don't necessarily feel that bad. Go to bed, maybe sleep slightly better. But you don't really know. It's reconnecting that behavior with something, with an output that makes it more sustainable. And this is one of the things I think we should talk about, is like how is this going to be introduced in a way that is sustainable for people? And maybe some of the blockers around it, because you're really excited by it, you've made some changes, but the penny's dropped in a way that it hasn't for virtually anyone else. So let's try and get to the heart of what it is that's made this like a driving force. Is it because you've talked about you had a scientific education already, and why would you want to put that into effect and live longer or even live on forever in theory?
Well, before all of that, I was a runner for 10 years, and people used to ask me, why do you do this with such passion? And I actually used to say, because when I'm 80, I want to be living a vital life. But this is long before any of my genetics education. Now that we have it's actually the control. We don't have a lot of control in our lives. I think we live these lives of fear without control. This new science and evidence that's come to the forefront puts the control back in the hands of people. With or without education, you have to believe, right? You have to, know something about it. But for me, it's that control. I think that's why it's going to be so big for even people who are not educated.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, it's the ability to control your destiny rather than be the more nihilistic and position of like we're all going into the sun anyway, which we may anyway. But a bit longer would be great. We talked on previous podcasts about kind of the things you wake up worrying about. Do you actually worry about getting old or worry about, getting a disease when you're young? Is that something that scares you?
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we all have family members that have had a life cut short because of some type of disease. And I think we live in a life of fear all the time. And I think that's why I'm so drawn to it, is that I have some control to maybe change the stars that way.
Have you ever, anyone in your family ever suffered from a disease of aging?
Yes. So I actually only had one grandparent when I was born. So I only knew one of my biological grandparents. The rest had gone from something. And that was an eye-opener for me. So I actually spent a lot of time thinking about, well, what if that was me? I know we have new technologies today, but what if the technologies don't work? And I also understand that we have a genetic predisposition for most of these conditions. So that did affect me. And talking about worrying about aging, well, that's what I do in my daily life. We're band-aiding things and injectables for people who see symptoms of aging. But what do we do in that world is we're actually just studying the science of gerontology. How do we get older, and how do we get along with the idea of getting older? Which is not an awful thing. It's not a bad thing. It's that life of ailment is a sad way to live. So we, in my other world, in the injectable world, we tend to band-aid things, but it's this fear of disease that I think it actually stresses people out. And I remember thinking that my grandmother passed probably around the age of 30. So when I turned 30, I remember my brain going and thinking, okay, maybe I should go get checked. How genetically passed on is this? And I remember thinking that way. And then I talked to my mother about that, because she lost her mother at, less than a year old. She never really knew her mother either because of this it was cancer, throat cancer, which, you know, we have technologies for these days, but she said I went through the same thing. But then once I got past 30, I started to sort of leave it alone. But I was at the age of 30, so we both kind of went through that. But what if we have some effect on that? How can we change that earlier on? And that's the beauty of all of this.
I think that's another key thing for me is this connection with, so from my backstory, that what really drove me into it, although I've always been interested in a way, it was when my mom got ill with it, with what I now think to be two diseases of aging. And I don't think they're unrelated. So she had Parkinson's and osteoporosis, mm-hmm. which is a really awful combination because you get unsteady and every time you fall, you break a bone. And she had 22 years of, it was just endless breaking of bones, in and out of hospital, wheelchairs. It was absolute hell. And leading into that, I had, a delusion of youth, which is the bad things happen to other people, don't happen to people like us. And then to have that completely destroyed by seeing my own mother go through all of that stuff made me very clear about how, like, I need to try and take some control to avoid this. I used to have on this Google Keep, and I used to have written on the top, find out how to prevent Parkinson's disease. And I used to Google every now and then, see if anyone had come up with that very specific question. And you're trying to find, you know, the various theories, like maybe it's how to go back to a pylori, or, but there was nothing really concrete and tangible I could actually think I can control that until this idea of aging and disease being one and the same thing. Now, I have a little bit of a philosophical concern around saying that aging is always a disease, because then you have saying children have a disease.
I agree with you, yeah.
But is it part of the same process? Clearly. I think there's a point where it becomes a disease and there's a point where it's the process that leads to disease, but that's philosophical, it doesn't really matter. The point is you can take control of things that that will delay or prevent the onset of disease, and they're right in front of you, and they're not that hard when you understand what the underlying mechanism is. So I'm pretty sure, for example, that with osteoporosis and Parkinson's, there'll be some mitochondrial connection. It's mitochondrial aid dysfunction, and that's also related to the epigenetic and all the other stuff we're going to talk about probably. But it was suddenly, exactly as you said, I hadn't actually realized this moment, it's about that thing of control. I now have some control. And how exciting, mm-hmm. because I've been looking for that control for years. I just didn't know what it was. And if you actually talk to your patients, they're all looking for some sort of control. Mm-hmm. Like every time I talk about this subject, this is one of the reasons I'm super excited by it, is that whenever you talk to someone, they're almost always doing something. It might be a collagen supplement. It might be exercising once a week. And you ask them why they're doing it, and it's for all the same reasons. And the same does not apply to aesthetics. We can walk out of this building now and ask the first 10 people we meet, would you ever had Botox? And 9 out of 10 of them would probably say no. But probably the majority of them are already doing something to avoid death. Mm-hmm. And so the idea that you actually can, and that we could bring it, is huge. I don't think people understand how big of an opportunity and how exciting it is. I think there's also a beautiful kind of poetry to these struggling healthcare professionals who get burnt out in a system that they can't influence, who leave to start their own thing, and the only thing they can think of is medical aesthetics because it's quite an easy entry, and then they become the front line of actually preventing disease, would be amazing. It's quite an exciting idea, and I know you're already doing it. So what is it like? Can you tell us a little bit about how it's working in your clinic and how you're introducing it to patients?
It is a new idea for us. We're still actually putting together the program. I think it's because it is a question mark of how do we do this that's sustainable, that people can be on board with, that's articulated in a way that's not too sciencey, because not everybody has that knowledge. And so we're still putting the program together, but what I have decided is that there are some things that we know for sure, and there's some things that we can believe in that has a lot of value, and we'll let the rest sort of work itself out. So we've stayed really rudimentary with it right now. And the number one is to look into, first of all, it's to explain to people that we have this control. And anybody that listens to this wants to know more. And you're right about people are already doing something. Does it really make a difference at the end of their life if they're taking a collagen supplement? Probably not, but they're just looking for that little piece of control. And I don't think we're not at the point where we have full control over it, but we have a good amount with the knowledge that we have. And most people are happy with some control, just a little piece. It brings them joy. It has an antidepressant effect. And so explaining that to people has been an awakening. So how do we give them some control in sort of a program, in a package? And what we've done is teamed up with the Glycan Age, and this is not company dropping, but we really did our research and know that they've got probably one of the best tests in the world. And that's a great starting point to determine what are our risk factors for the future. So we're offering that. We trialed it first in our executive team, and we work with our medical director, who is also really on board with this, which is essential. And we have that as a sort of a starting point. So once we have that, and what that is looking at the glycosylation patterns of our IgG or immunoglobulin G antibodies to determine what have we got going on, what's the messaging inside that says we're sort of predestined to something. It's not a diagnosis, but we have some data that we can manipulate a little bit. Once we get that information, then we have an idea of where we can go with it and what improvements can we make to give the patient that control back. So one thing we do know for sure is that glucose monitoring can make a difference. We know that it can create metabolic syndrome or conditions of the future. So we want to look at that. We do know that for a fact, and that is in traditional medicine. We look at that. We also look at weight proportions, weight, visceral fat, and you know, a BMI has some value there. And if we can get people to drop some of the excess weight, then maybe they are in a, they can change the trajectory for these metabolic conditions. And what little changes can we make from that data that we get in that DNA test? So there's that. And so those are some of the core things that we're offering, the Glycan Age, and as well as we know that NAD supplementation, or not supplementation, but NAD increasing in our cells through the Nutrito is another option for us, because we know that it solves a lot of the issues that we have of aging, plus a bunch of other conditions. And so those are the core things that we're offering now with confidence that we can make an impact for somebody, and we look at their biological age, how really from the inside, how healthy, or where can we make these improvements to help somebody along their path. And I just want to describe what essentially we're doing is we're not really trying to increase people's lifespan. We're not trying to make them live to 150, but whatever age they do live to, that they can live a more vital life. That those are little snippets of controllable factors that we want people to feel really good about. So it's a small grouping of things that we're offering, but we know that in traditional medicine, they're welcomed. And so that's what we're starting with. And that's sort of what we're doing. And we're still figuring out how to package it properly. I feel like I'm missing something in there. But packaging that properly so that we don't take this in such large strides that we get struck down and we get a lot of critics. And when in that smaller package, we feel like people are more likely to be on board, and from a wide range of demographics. So they believe in that, and so that's where we started.
Yeah, I love that your approach is exactly how I try and approach change as well, which is you don't try and change everything at once. And this applies even with your own health when you're trying to improve your lifestyle, is don't think you're going to go from not running at all to running 7 days a week and going to the gym three times a week and never eating an unhealthy snack. Just start with one of those things. So you're introducing things gradually, learning from it. I think really key thing is to start to educate yourself and then to educate your patients. That sequence is key. If you try and start selling a bunch of stuff that you don't understand, you're going to get caught out. It'll be obvious, to be honest, and you probably won't even do it.
That's
because
right.
You'll feel unconfident.
We'll be no further ahead. We'll be backwards, actually.
So this incremental approach. I loved what you said about it being an antidepressant. I've never heard someone say it in that order. I actually say to my NHS patients, the opposite of depression is not happiness, it's control.
Interesting.
And that's so that idea... You've noticed or seen in yourself, presumably, that if you have that if you're maintaining your health and you feel you have control of it, that's an antidepressant.
Yes.
Where did you come across that idea?
Well, I think for myself, I would never say that I've been depressed, but I have conversations. I mean, so I've got years of having conversations with patients, and that's so the idea of control is actually totally taken out of my other business, because when they have a little bit of control over aging, we know that neuromodulators, there's some studies out there saying that neuromodulators can have an antidepressant effect. And is it because it's systemic and it actually crosses the blood-brain barrier? No, it doesn't. But the effect that people get is a rush of dopamine, is a good feeling, and that brings them out of this depressive feeling. So it's the factor of control, and that makes them feel better about themselves and reduces stress and the cortisol levels and all of the things that create such a destructive environment inside of our body that makes it a depressive vessel.
Yep. That's brilliant. That's such a helpful idea, because I realize even with my journey, it started with a complete lack of control, which is my mum's ill. I have no idea why. Yeah. My grandma had the same thing. There's no particular gene that stands out, but they've clearly both been affected by something. But I have no way of knowing what it is. And I had loads of anxiety around that. And back in 2015, when I thought she was going to die, she actually lived for another 5 years, but she completely collapsed, and it triggered this anxiety in me. And that you can think of anxiety as similar to depression. It's a complete lack of control over something that you feel like you're heading straight towards. But the journey since then is about incrementally feeling more and more in control. And I think it's a common experience. I think we all feel in different times in our life like you're not in control of the factors. It's very, very useful to think about patients seeking aesthetic treatment as seeking control. Mm-hmm. And I could actually relate it to aesthetic stuff as well. When I had my hair done, it was like I had hair transplants. It actually wasn't because I cared what anyone thought about it. It was that it represented a lack of control. And weirdly, the moment I decided to go ahead with it, I stopped worrying about it. Before I'd had the hair transplants, I didn't give it a second thought until I arrived on the theater table. And that was really interesting to me, because I realized the anxiety was not about appearance, it was about control. Mm-hmm. So we're all, and I think it's a pretty common human experience, we're all seeking control. And now we have this new exciting opportunity of being able to control the ultimate thing to some degree. I know we haven't got complete control, which is maybe you can delay the worst thing that will ever happen to you. Maybe even one day indefinitely. I think we're a very long way from that, but maybe one day. So tremendously exciting. So I wonder, with your experience so far, have you managed to see that click in patients yet? Have you actually seen patients have that epiphany?
I would still say we're in the very early stages of this offering, but I had a lot of conversations ahead of time. I have not had one person who wasn't interested in moving to the next step after having even just a small conversation around it. So the light bulb does go off. I have, like I said, nobody yet has totally discounted it or said I'm not interested in learning more. And even people who would challenge a lot of other scientific things in my life, like challenging, you know, sometimes the aesthetic side of things or, you know, I've had so many conversations even regarding smoking. Does smoking really do this? Like very blatant things that we know that cause us to have poor health going forward. But when it comes to this, they're interested in knowing more. And what I love is that anybody at really any decade of life can take part in this. It is absolutely universal. It's game changing. But yeah, I've had most people be very responsive and receptive to it, and people who want to go to the next step. So that's how we've started, and I want to keep it that way so that we're successful. So we don't put too much out there that we do get those people who are like, I just don't believe in this.
So have you encountered any resistance at all when talking about this subject? Anyone who feels
no? Not complete resistance.
Interesting. Because I've observed, if you ever watch Brian Johnson and look in the comments and see the response to him, a lot of people think avoiding death is kind of narcissistic and self-obsessed and all those things. And I find that, and the other thing is kind of there's a puritanical kind of judgmental side of it, that you're almost inflicting some sort of austerity on yourself in order to live forever. So it's like you're suffering, but what's the point in living? And I think that's one of the bigger hurdles to overcome. So I give you, to make it more real, when Brian Johnson releases olive oil, I was like, I couldn't buy it because I was like, it's sold out already. So I started looking at why can I find a better olive oil? And I came across this guy called the Olive Oil Guy. And I was like, I should start a brand with him because he is so into food. And he's not interested in longevity at all. He just loves olive oil. And I was like, that's the missing bit, is that we have to package this as a loving of life and enjoying life more and living longer, not like making yourself suffer and not have any friends and all the stuff that people make up that isn't true about Brian Johnson. But I think that's one of our barriers to overcome. I think maybe we haven't overcome it because people are already seeking solutions when they're in front of us. But if you're going to make a bigger impact, people have to realize that this is not about austerity. It's about effectively, it's like loving yourself, mm-hmm. not depriving yourself. And that'll be the hardest challenge to overcome.
And also clarifying that the definition, like, so longevity itself is an interesting term, and I haven't found a better term yet, but increasing my lifespan is not, the number of years I'm on this planet is not the goal for me. It's to live a vital life as long as I can. And if I guess I haven't had that much resistance because the people who I'm speaking to about it are already primed. They're ready for this information. They're ready for this knowledge. They've already taken steps to do certain things to better their health. But longevity is, it's not about making us live forever. It's about what do we have? We do have this number of years, and how can we make it better? Because the amount of suffering that goes on in the world and the amount of the lack of control is concerning. And we are headed in a direction that's actually going to take more control from us. If we keep thinking about medicine in this way, we're going to have more suffering. The way that we eat and the sedentary lifestyles, and I mean, I see a lot of it in North America. I think it's an absolute epidemic, but it's not about increasing the years. And so I've asked people, if you could live longer, would you? Most people resort to, I don't want to because I'm going to live these frail years longer, and it's just suffering. It's just more suffering. Okay, but what if you could live longer but live like you are now until almost that point? The answer has always been yes. And it doesn't matter if they have any education on this or none. And that to me is the whole goal of it. I don't want to live longer. I do think that maybe in the future, I don't believe we'll see it necessarily in our lifetime. History shows that we are living longer, but I don't think that's the goal and the messaging that I'm putting out there. It's about the healthier life while we're here. And I don't think if you put that together properly, that's not going to be a hard sell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it's much more sustainable to offer people something that's good for them now than might be good for them. Mm-hmm. But it's very intangible.
Yeah, it is. Living to 150 is intangible, and it also comes with this negative connotation that I'm going to live to 150, but I'm going to not be well from 90 to 150, mm-hmm. and that's a whole lifetime of suffering.
Yeah. It actually touches on one of the little divides within the sector, which is the whole, is it about strength? You know, if you look at what predicts your life, like it's VO2 max, hand grip strength, all those sort of things have really strong predictive values. But there's a sector who are like, oh, it's low protein and, you know, calorie restriction. And there's a little bit of a divide going on because the mouse studies get these mice to live a really long time, but they're kind of thin and frail mice. I think that's kind
and
of part
yeast.
Of it.
And like, those are the studies that are going on that we have a hard time believing that this could happen in humans. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. So this challenge between health span and lifespan, if you just look at put a lab mouse and do whatever it takes to make it live as long as possible, it does spend a long period being kind of still and weak, even though it's living. And I think that's put a lot of people off. It's the kind of skinny looking bearded guy at the conference who just doesn't look that healthy, and maybe he's going to live a long time, but he doesn't really look like
it. Not a quality of life.
Yeah. So I think it's a little battle to win on how best to balance these variables and still have strength as you get older. Like I recently went snowboarding, and I'm now 10 years older than I was the last time I went. Thankfully, I've been going to the gym a lot, and I could feel like, well, I fell once, and I felt, because I've been working my shoulders, I felt my arm get yanked, and I thought, you know what, if I hadn't gone to the gym, I bet that would have come out of my socket, because it's just not strong enough to hold itself together. And this is what happens, unfortunately, as you get older, is you actually die from silly stuff. You trip, you fall, you know, you lose your grip, and then you've got a broken bone, and off you go down a track. So it's not a compelling sell. It's much better to sell this idea of strength and health span than just living forever, but not be able to do much. But it's interesting because I see it even amongst some of the most influential people, that there is this pull in these two different directions. I think David Sinclair seems to do much more of the low protein stuff, whereas a lot of the other Peter Attia is much more into like getting your protein and having muscle mass.
Yes. And I think the way that I divide that information, and I keep having to come back to this path in my own brain as well, and helping other people come back to this same path, is that there's a lot of information out there. Some says that this amount of protein will help you do X, Y, Z in this amount. But when it comes to vital years and longevity, what does the science say about that? And then we kind of have to forget everything else, because otherwise these two worlds will continue to fight, and everybody who wants to work on health and longevity will get lost in the cracks. So I think we just have to keep bringing it back to, okay, what does the study on protein, what are the studies on amount of protein you should have, or protein as a component of your body, or how much you should intake? What does that, what does that mean in the longevity world? Not the how strong or great or healthy am I today, but in terms of longevity. I think we just have to keep picking out some of the studies, because I think that's where it's getting lost. The health world says you got to eat all of this, and then they might all of this protein, and others might say the vegan diet is absolutely the best. But what does the science world say on longevity itself? So again, there's still a lot of information to go through, but I think it's just keep refocusing back on what longevity means, because that's where the discussion and the arguments are coming from, is that there's, yes, the study says this and the study says this, but what does it mean for longevity?
Yeah, a good strategic way of looking at it. There's a lot of social media stuff that confuses people as well, and social media rewards extremes. So if you're like, protein is killing you, then you'll get a lot of hits. And similarly, if you're like, plants are killing you, and the truth is, neither one of them are killing you. It's complicated, but the headlines drag people off. And this is one of the things my wife Miranda hates, is that she's almost going away from listening to Stephen Bartlett, because every podcast contradicts the previous podcast and creates a lack of control in order to get
exactly
attention.
It actually puts us in a worse position to try to get messaging across.
And this is where I think we talked a bit, maybe we can, I'm happy to put it on here as well, that it would be useful to get people together to master these different domains, so that we can share as we grow, like in some sort of community forum where you know, because there's a lot to learn. If you just pick sleep, there's a ton of stuff to learn. There are supplements that affect it. There's diet, exercise, your circadian rhythm. So you want someone who can really think about that, so that you can piece together evidence-based recommendations that are much more resilient to social media challenges. So that's a lot of work for one person. But that's only one area. So it'd be really cool if we could pull something together that helps aesthetic clinicians make a transition slowly and carefully. In fact, one of the words I came across is it provector? I think it means to execute with care. And I really like this idea of like, we have to execute, you can't just theorize, like do something, but do it carefully and slowly, incrementally. And that's how you create any transformation.
Absolutely. And I think for me, there's so many different things that we can focus on. I think what I'm most attracted to is actually the glycan aspect. It's because it is if you articulate it properly, it's an actual visualization of what's going on inside and the changes that you can make. So I might not be an expert in all of the different areas, but I think that's the one road I'm going to go down with the most gumption, but maybe that will change for me. But it's spreading the word about the glycan. I think that's, and again, that's measurable. So
yeah. No, for me, the measurability is really key. Otherwise, it's hard to know, hard to feel the progress. What about, can you give us an example of, just to make it more real for people, like how you are relating this, how you were introducing this specifically to a specific patient? So you obviously keep them anonymous, but can you remember a case where someone came in to talk about an aesthetic thing and they had a really positive response to the longevity, and how did you make that connection?
Well, we talk about these things. So I have the blessing of people, my patients tend to follow me and just want to know everything that I know. And so I've had a lot of great conversations coming very naturally and very authentically. Sometimes they go, I've had one patient in particular that went to a camp in the US that did a lot of looking at the inside. They didn't do it the way that we're doing it, but they were looking to see where they could make some improvements. It is, I don't want to say it's archaic, but it's a little bit older, maybe, you know, something that would have been at the forefront 10 or 20 years ago. And they went away and spent some money and spent a few days there, and they did different tests, and so that's opened up conversations for me. But I have one case in particular that I have a patient that was going through our weight loss journey, and we started that a long time before this longevity thing. And this person wasn't as successful as other people were on this weight loss journey. And all I could think about in my head was that this person has way more going on than just weight. They've already started this metabolic decline, and I just know it. I don't have a panel to prove it or blood work to prove it. But now this person, we're actually putting them through some blood work to just see, because I want to prove to myself that everything is connected. And so, like, good or bad, I get have these conversations with patients all the time, every day, about the fact that they're already living a healthy lifestyle and they just want to sort of prove it to themselves and figure out where they can improve. Or other people are focusing on one thing, but we're like, you know what, there's actually a few other things that we could really set you up for success for the future. They might be focused on pounds on the scale, but what about the BMI and how that relates to how healthy you are in 10 years and the fact that it might be prolonging any type of metabolic dysfunction. Maybe there's type 2 diabetes in the family. And so the conversations are happening, and they're coming from positive aspects and negative aspects, but they're happening.
So is there a typical type of patient that you would say you spot straight away who you think, I must have this conversation, or are you applying it to literally everyone?
I think my mind applies it to everybody because it is applicable to everybody. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I presume because of your conversations you're having that you never have any resistance. It's just a case of tell me more.
I don't have any resistance as of yet, but I know that it's coming. And the larger platforms I get on speaking about this, the more resistance it just happens, right? You need to be questioned in order to get better at things. We increase your knowledge and solidify your knowledge. But no, I haven't had any incredible resistance yet because I really do believe people are primed for something better than what we've got right now. And there is something better than what we've got right now. We are focusing on symptoms after the fact. That's the way our whole world works. And our traditional medicine works, but there's more to it. And I think deep down inside, anybody who cares about their health at all knows that. They know that there's some things they could have changed in their life to make a difference, but they never really had any quantifiable information to solidify or back that. And they don't have access to databases with evidence-based practice or white papers or anything like that. But most people have an inclination that there's something different and something better out there. And I think maybe because of my geographic location, I am in North America, and we probably are one of the most unhealthiest populations in the world, that people see things around them, not just their own journeys, but they do know that, well, that person, of course, they got lung cancer, they're a smoker, or of course, like they have a lot of pieces of information to tell them that this could be a really good thing. I haven't met, and I think that's why I feel so positive about it, is that a part of it is that I know people are looking for this. People are looking for some answers to gain, like I said, just a small amount of control. So I let the conversations be navigated on their own based on how much knowledge or they want to have, but I haven't met incredible resistance. I hope that's a positive thing.
Yeah, it might be just the stage people are at. They're looking for answers.
Yes.
You know, like we said before, I was saying, you know, the teacher arrives when the student is ready. That saying applies to patients. They're ready to learn when they are in that mm-hmm. position, but the average person on the street will probably have different resistances, mm-hmm. Which we need to figure out.
And we'll use that population. So I don't think I'm going to focus on the masses of population. I am going to focus on the people who are primed and ready, because if we can get that message across and have great success in this population, it will naturally trickle to the rest of the population, which is also our struggle with our governments and our governing bodies that are also not getting behind this. That if we just create this force with the right population, it's going to be undeniable. People are going to ask for it. It will be on demand. People will know and be more educated with the right information, with the right tactics to live a longevity lifestyle, and then it will be undeniable. So I think it's important to focus on that population first. And what I have in my clinics are people who are already looking to improve themselves, even though it's superficial. When you relay it, when you articulate it, like, okay, what we're doing today with our injectable treatments is a beautiful revolution in medicine. It's amazing. But what if we could go to the next level and think upstream? What if actual degradation of collagen and the fat pads, what if that was actually prolonged? We're actually anti-aging from the inside out. And that's why I think it works so well with aesthetics. So my population that I'm talking to is primed and ready. And I think it's okay to just focus on those people. Because if you focus on the right things first, you get the momentum going. And then you focus on everybody else. And if they don't want to be on board, even if it's undeniable, then that's actually their own type of control. They're still controlling their life. But but they have the knowledge to choose one way or the other.
Well, one of the moments I had bouncing off that was that where I got a massive sense of clarity about how it all fits in was around talking to patients about why they had aesthetic treatments, and so many of them were related back to their identity. And then I was learning about the cellular aging and how the epigenome basically is cluttered up with noise, and effectively the cell, the genes that should be being expressed aren't, and other genes that shouldn't be are. And effectively what happens to your body cell by cell is you start to lose cellular identity. And that was like, wow, like these people who feel like they're losing their identity, they are actually in biological sense losing their identity. And so it is actually getting right to the core of what aging is and how you experience it, not just on a biochemistry level, but what you see and feel is this loss of identity. So it is right to the heart of the matter. That kind of thing just makes me feel like it's the right track. Yes. Like it's absolutely the right track.
And I know we talked about this earlier, but that intuition that's never strayed me and has brought me the success in my business. I get the same, actually even more, a strong fire intuition about longevity and the science of of living a better life.
Yeah, I think that's what you and I share like really strongly. I had the same moment of like, this is it. This is actually, maybe this is why I never gave up my GP practice, and maybe it's why, you know, it all has to come and become one thing now. I don't actually know how I'm going to do it, and I think we're similar at stages. Like you just know you're going to do something.
Yes. But we do have to action it, and I think if we just wade in the water and don't take action, like I said, there's a specific set of things that we do know with confidence that we can help improve, and so I think there is that aspect of taking action. I visited the Museum of Florence Nightingale when I was in London a couple of days ago, and that was such an incredible moment for me. I hope I don't actually get emotional, but I was emotional 5 times in that museum. Number one, because somebody took me there that actually looked at me and said, this is important to you. I'm going to make it important to me. And I'm bringing you here. I didn't even know this museum existed, but she is the mother of nursing, right? And as I went in and toured and learned how much of a pioneer she was in a world of incredible adversity where nursing was a lot of things. It wasn't looked in a great light. And women who were well-to-do were not supposed to go get education. They were supposed to make the home a good place, and that was their role in life. And she really had to push through. And then she started using philosophy and data and just let all of the noise go. And she really pushed through and really pioneered, and she changed the world with her information. She had such a strong intuition to say, no, sterile technique and sterile procedures do save lives. And just pushing forward with that, I just feel like that's my job now. It just reminded me that I don't care about the naysayers. I know what I know. I know I have this genetics background, and I'm going to be that. I'm going to pioneer this as a nurse who, in reality, it would be a geneticist or a pharmacogeneticist or a physician or somebody else out there that might be taking stages and talking about this. I'm going to do that. And I don't care if people look at me like I don't have enough, you know, credential to do that. And I just was reminded of that a couple of days ago. And I feel like it came at the right place and the right time. There are actionable things that we can do, and there will be naysayers, and there will be people who want to cut it down. But I'm just going to forge forward because I know it's the right thing for the future. And here we are 150 years later, and so much of the world has been impacted by the actions that she took then. And I hope that in 150 years, our world has changed because of the impact that we're unafraid to have today. So I just, that was a tangent, but I thought all I could think about was that while I was going through that museum, is that we have an opportunity, and we have much better technology, and we have biopsies and microscopes. We have an ability to look in, and that once there's the demand for that technology and science, it'll just flourish, as a lot of this is privately funded currently. We can make an impact even when there's a lot against us right now, but we have a lot going for us too.
Yeah, I think that's a beautiful example. The Florence Nightingale is absolutely a key idea for people listening to listen to, because there is no way that you're going to get through this without being criticized. Like, I don't know who's going to do it, but someone's going to tell you to get back in your box.
I'm going to say it right here on your podcast. I'm going to hold that on my shoulders, and I'm going to wait for those moments. And I mean, I do it in aesthetics. I do a lot of speaking, and there's always someone in the crowd that wants to challenge. And if I have enough scientific background to be able to come back and say, no, actually this has been found. And just like I've always been doing, the underdog speaking, I'm going to do the exact same thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the more people do that, the better. Mm-hmm. Because the people who quietly say nothing, but they're actually on the right track, that's a tragedy. So it's better to be to make a mistake on a stage than to keep your secrets to yourself somewhere else. Let's make it more practical, because we also both run clinics, and they're currently, you know, if you run a clinic in North America, you're supposed to be able, you should be generating something like $1,000 an hour, from what I've heard. So how are you going to have these chats and get people exercising and not eating sugar and pay for it? Because you couldn't stop all your staff doing this. Do you have any idea how that's going to actually work?
It's a mission. And often missions go unrewarded at the very beginning, and this is not new. Anybody who's doing, like I just said, this is privately funded. Most of it's privately funded. These scientists are doing work based on private funding. And I don't think, I mean, it has to be part of the goal. But, of course, we charge for a certain amount of these things, but there's also an element that we won't charge for. However, when people want to be guided, people will pay to be guided on things that they can get for free on the internet. They require somebody confident to light the way, to lead the way. So that is what I have going for me. And again, it's in infant stages. However, this absolutely can be a business, and aesthetics is the business. And I'm going to talk about that even just from a Canadian perspective. Our healthcare system is not providing what it needs to provide. It is archaic and no longer working. There's a whole bunch of aesthetic providers popping up, but they want to still remain in the medical field because that's what they know. And just like Peter Attia, I felt the exact same way reading his opening, or maybe it's Attia, in his opening chapter that said, I really moved away from the scientific, from the medical world, because it was eating away at him. And then there was something that reinvigorated to bring him back. And I feel like that's my same story, is that I kind of moved away from that. I felt overcome by the institution. I really can't make a difference there, but this is how I feel like I can. So aesthetic practitioners, as we are multiplying, we have an opportunity to fill that gap between traditional medicine that's not doing a great job and private medicine that is doing a lot of the same things, but giving you quicker access to these things. And I think that if we can just look at it as this is our responsibility, because we are growing in numbers and we are doing things independently that was never been done before, now is the time to get on board with this, so that the aesthetic world, A, holds its weight again in the world of science, and B, that we're growing in numbers, we have an opportunity to speak to people one-on-one, have them make a difference in their life, and just like everything else, they talk to other people, and they tell other people about their success stories, and then it sort of grows from there. There is a business aspect to it. We do have supplements that we can offer. We have DNA tests that we can offer that most people would not be able to look at that and actually extract information from to make changes in their life, but we're able to simplify that for them. So we have to do a really good job of understanding it before we can offer it. But there's that. And there actually are some retail items. Like I said, the glucose monitoring, anybody can go pick one up. Why don't they? Because they're for diabetics. Why are they for diabetics? You can look into your own body, but those are things that you can actually sell in your clinics. That's what we're doing. So you can go and buy it from a pharmacy, or you can buy it from us with guidance to tell you why this is a really cool tool for you. So there is an opportunity to make money there. And I will tell you that the retail markups on those things are incredible. Those pharmaceutical companies making those trackers are marking that up widely. So greatly. And so there is an opportunity in some of those items. And then when you package it, you can sell a package, even if it's just knowledge, because most people don't have the knowledge to make any change, but they will come. You create it and you market it and they will come. And I don't mean to say that this all is about the almighty dollar, but if you're in business and we want to make this go somewhere, it does require funding. Even the private funding, like that, it requires money churning and people paying for things and buying into things to actually make it a thing.
Yep. You absolutely, I mean, I know we're obviously not, you can't, money isn't your central focus, but you have to have, it's like oxygen. Yep. you need some of it to power things. It makes the world go round, as you say. Whether you spend it on a big screen TV on holiday is a completely separate point to the fact your business needs it in order to function. But what I like about what you've said is hints back to actually your first video that you told me about on the previous podcast, which is it's about trust, so credibility. So the core asset that you're building is actually credibility. And you'll find out how to monetize that later. But at the moment, it's right about like how do you develop trust and credibility with your patients so that when they get the same advice, and this is something I pay for in my life, I pay a fortune for it, is getting the same advice from someone I trust versus the internet. Because you can Google how to do anything, but why don't you act on it? You don't act on it because you don't really believe that it's true until you meet someone who you trust who gives you that piece of advice and you're like, I did know that already, but now I'm going to do something about it. So I think that's a very useful idea for people to realize is that there are a million people on the internet making videos on these topics, but people aren't actioning them because they don't trust the person who's made it. Not really. They can become that person over time if they spend the time learning about this, actually becoming an expert in it, which is not going to take 3 weeks. It's an ongoing process. But become that person, and then you're going to be part of this, I think, complete revolution. I think the world, this is one of 5 or 6 things in the world that are going to completely transform everything.
And I don't think we need to be embarrassed or ashamed that there is some profit to be had on this. Because our healthcare system is a business. Our governments are a business. They turn money to pay their employees. We just don't see it that way because we're getting some benefit from it and it feels free. In Canada, it feels free. Well, no, it's not. We pay a lot of taxes. It's likely mismanaged. And to what end? To give us, to provide us with people who can free us from some pain of the end result of having crazy chronic conditions. Why should I be afraid to make money on something that can completely prevent, increase the quality of life of people, which is actually should be the whole goal of medicine and healthcare? Why should I be afraid to do that when our governments and our healthcare systems are already profiting on that and getting nowhere with it? So we should really remove that from our worry that it should not be shameful. And as a matter of fact, those people should be actually getting paid. The people who are preventing disease should be getting paid more because it actually saves money in the long run. It's just like this whole idea of food that makes you sick and food that makes you healthy. Why the food that makes you sick should be so much more expensive than the food that makes you healthy. It's a backwards, and I'm not afraid to say that it's backwards, and we're going to flip it. Let's flip it.
Absolutely. There's a quote on this, which I'm probably going to butcher, but it's along the lines of a poor man just wants to be rich, and a rich man who's sick just wants to be well. That's not exactly the quote, but essentially, when you are sick, you suddenly realize there's nothing more valuable than your health, nothing. You could be offered billions, but if you're lying sick, unable to move, what would you do with it? So it makes no sense. Your health is absolutely the priority. And it should be how most of us, it should actually be one of the central organizing principles of how you run your life. And the only reason it isn't is because people don't see the connection. It's the control element again. So as soon as you have that control, then it makes sense to spend money and time on it because you get the time, you literally get the time back. And this is also why there should be an incentive for the right science to be implemented. You should be rewarded. I absolutely think we should have a goal of making it accessible. In fact, there are lots of people with that. I'm on a WhatsApp group with lots of longevity doctors, and there's a guy with a pharmacy, and his goal is, I said, there's no point, these tests are too expensive. The average person can't do them. How are we going to make them accessible? And like 2 or 3 people come back, so that's my mission. So I think there are people all around the world who are going to work to make these things more accessible, to bring more people into it, and to actually get the change. And along the way, anyone who's passionate about it, you're going to make a living, don't worry about it. But I'm at a similar stage to you, which is I don't really care about, I believe that's somewhere in the future, but right now it's like, let's just get moving, start the basics with it, and that's going to emerge.
You have to start somewhere with it. And at one time, so I don't know, do you have banana trees here? We don't have them in Canada. there was a time where bananas were not, you couldn't buy them at the grocery store. It was a foreign concept. And then we had these trade agreements and brought in bananas from Costa Rica to Canada, and they were expensive. Now it's one of the cheapest fruits that you can buy. And then we went through this revolution of organic bananas, so things that were a little bit more free from pesticides, etc. They were more expensive, but now they're the same price. Why? Because volume demand has to start somewhere, and it will become more accessible. And there will be people who pay higher prices for it at the beginning, but then once it creates that inertia, there it will become more accessible because the governments will not be able to look away. They will not be able to say that this is not working. They will see it in their bottom line that we're spending a lot more money, lot less money on these chronic conditions. And back to that idea of control, I was going to use your mother as an example, if I might, that we have a lot of control now while we are healthy. We have so much control. Once the systems start falling apart and it is a domino effect, after at that point we have a diagnosis and we start treating the symptoms, our control goes way down. And at the end of the day, we still lose our loved ones to these conditions. So let's make the best impact when we have the control. Let's stop being afraid to charge people for something, because that's actually where it has to start getting some attention. And then it'll be undeniable.
Yeah, 100% agree. I think I was thinking about this with the hallmarks of aging, you know, these 12 different ways that we age, and what the connection is between them all. And because that's the really interesting thing is I think that they're essentially networked. So the network is strong while they're all functioning, but you can knock any one of them out and it makes them weaker in different ways. Knock two of them out and it's really bad. So there is this exponential decline basically that happens, and I think it's proven with aging. So this is why there's so much to be gained, because if you get ahead of that, you stop an exponential decline like way sooner. So the power in theory is quite significant. It's you know, it's not like obviously exponential is still a powerful thing. But it's the wellness aspect that I think you see the benefit in. It's not the maybe you live to 93 instead of 75 or 80 or something, but it's that you're so well for so long because everything functions. Yes, it will still currently, I think we're still going to head for death. It's eventually,
yeah, of course.
But it's a much longer period of health through maintaining that network of functions.
I think somewhere along the lines we got away from, like what we do is we're supposed to be improving quality of life for people, right? But quality of life improvement, you know, at any stage, but we sort of fallen away from that, I think. And this, I think this solves it. And nobody is immune, not one person. And those hallmarks of aging do not happen in isolation. They are all commingling and there are specific activities and changes that we can make in our life that address all of them. So I'm just so fascinated by it. And I do think people are going to listen to this and wonder, how do I incorporate this? And it's coming. We're figuring it out how to do that. And I know that there's people interested because I've dropped little things on social media and I've had comments from other physicians like, hey, what's that? And they're watching. They want to be able to offer it themselves, but I think a lot of people don't know how. And I do know there's going to be physicians listening to this. And I think that I'm just going to go out there and say it. Because of the way that traditional medicine is, the way that physicians are on the hook for a lot of legal aspects, that the way that traditional physicians look at health and illness is blocking them from being able to look at this, believe in it fully, and offer it. And I think physicians in particular are going to have to get out of their own way and reinvent. They're going to have to let go of a lot more knowledge than somebody like me would have to. So I think physicians themselves could be a little bit of a barrier to their own success and longevity or helping their own patients. So I just want to say that because I think that will change the thought pattern process for a lot of physicians listening. I do see that a lot. And I've had conversations with other physicians. I can see that pattern happening where they go, okay, well, what about this? And then they go back to a traditional way of looking at medicine. And you really have to pull yourself out of that. You've got to start thinking very differently than the way you've been programmed to think. The way that you've paid for all that medical school and that conditioning, you're going to have to uncondition yourself. Deconditioned to actually be able to help in the longevity world. Mm-hmm. And I'm only saying that because I just want physicians to start thinking that way. And I think it's another reason why in North America, we say that the nurses are sort of taking over in the aesthetics side of things, because independent practice is newer for us. Physicians are programmed to think about health and wellness very differently than we are. And they're not great with business because they're programmed to say we can't turn a profit from what we do as a GP or as a ER doctor or whatever. And I just watch the challenge with physicians with that. And I think this is going to be an even greater challenge. I think many of them will behind it, will be behind it and love it, but I think they'll have a greater challenge articulating and rolling it out.
There's a fundamental difference that I think aesthetic practitioners have already, which is we are already optimizing for something better, whereas physicians are trying to restore you back to neutral. It's like, you're getting sick, I'm restore you to normal, zero, basically. Whereas aesthetics has always been a bit like, no, we're going for better than normal. We're trying to make you feel more confident. And it's a different psychology, more growth-oriented rather than certainty. So,
yes.
And I think that's where the potential shift needs to happen, is that you need to think, well, if you're really going to help someone, you have to be in touch with the outcomes. Because the outcome, if I put you on an NAD supplement and check the outcome, if you're a normal physician, is nothing. But if you pay attention to what you do in your life and the decisions that you make and the energy that you've got and how your business grows and how your relationships might change because you're sleeping better and all the stuff that happens when you try and optimize yourself, it's actually enormous. The impact is enormous, but it's all positive. You're not avoiding a negative at this stage. You're just becoming a more flourishing individual. I always think of what are they called? You know, Spock, what race is Spock? Anyway, their catchphrase is live long and prosper.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
The Vulcan.
Yeah, the Vulcan, live long and prosper. Because that's really what we're shifting away from, don't suffer and try and prolong your illness for a bit longer into a totally different way, which is live long and prosper. We want you to not just feel healthy, but also to prosper. And that's where I think there's the missing bit, is that when you optimize someone's health in terms of their physical health and you teach them the stuff they need to know about all the other things that make for a healthy human, they then prosper. And so everyone's a winner. And it's huge. It's leveraging one healthy thing on top of the next until you've got healthy families and healthy communities. And it's a beautiful thing if we can make that shift.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, but I know we're going there. And I'm actually really excited to see what we do with it. This, and those who jump on board with this, those who get in there, they're part of the future. And I think things like aesthetics, everybody's focusing on that. There's this massive opportunity sitting over here while everyone is focusing on this and going to all those conferences and looking at this as aesthetics as like this. But there's a huge opportunity for anybody who is wondering sort of where they're going and how they can be part of the future. You've got to be part of the longevity train, and it's not a trend. It is here to stay. I know absolutely, a matter of fact, and there's so many things in medicine that, we used to use chloroform to put people out. And so there's been so many transitions and evolution of medicine that this is just naturally going to be part of it. It's not going anywhere. It's not trending. This is absolutely the future. And the slower you get on board with that, the more you're actually going to hold your own business back.
Well, there's it's a great saying, which is, it's not always about the surfer, it's about the wave. And I think it's something I felt with the beginning of aesthetics. I remember there were people who were on 10 years before me who were like really successful, still in the industry now. And I'm like, I don't think they're that great, but they were on the first part of the wave. And so they rode that right to the top. And that's going to happen again in this. But this wave is 1,000 times bigger.
Yes.
Because everyone, it might even be more than that. It's several orders of magnitude bigger. Like I was saying before, if you ask the average person about would you have Botox, it's about 1% of people apparently who say yes. Maybe it's 3% now, it's gone up a bit, but it applies to 100% of people if you phrase the question correctly. Would you like to not die?
Yeah.
So,
and after Inner Circle last year, and again, that was the spark that started all of this thinking and research and diving into it for me. But I remember after, I don't know if you saw me, but I was on the edge of my seat. I took so many notes from the longevity speeches, and it was probably the number one thing that I took away from that. But I remember getting up and just feeling like Bambi, like eyes open in this new world. And I remember hearing some people behind me saying, okay, I need a break. That was too much science for me. And I'm like, okay, you're part of that group. you really need to be on board to be part of the future of aesthetics. So we did talk about what that longevity is not living longer, but that it's living healthier. Yeah, but, and I think we touched on Houseman, but anybody listening might not actually have known that. We should probably throw out a few books for people that could start somewhere. And we're talking B2B here, right? There's a lot of listeners are going to be in our world. So some of the books that I've read, I started with Lifespan because it was sort of the origin, so I've been told. I read The Telomere Effect, which is looking at our daily lives and what we do and how it influences the telomeres, which are the marker on our chromosomes that give us an indication of how healthy our cells are and how much more they can replicate, which again, at the end of replication is cell death, so, or dysfunction. So I read The Telomere Effect and The Outlive by Peter Attia and The Spoon-Fed, which talks about food. What else am I missing? What books have you read that we could...
Yeah, you've covered several of them. I like I think it's called How to Sleep.
Okay.
If you want to follow him on Twitter, it's called The Sleep Diplomat, and he's written a book on specifically on sleep. Sleep is often a lot of these people focus on and say it's the first pillar, because you basically make poor decisions. Your blood glucose is deranged. You know, you get resistant to insulin resistant. But also it's your ability to make the right decision and to feel in control. Also all comes through sleep, as a lot of your circadian rhythms, and all the genes are controlled basically through having a regular sleep pattern. So I've spent a lot of effort trying to get sleep right.
Same. I actually was doing that a long time ago and just learning that that's already one box I've got checked off. So that's great. I was already, you know, hitting one of those markers, but
yeah.
Interestingly, when I had a meeting with the glycan company, I just asked out of random, where are your customers coming from? And interestingly, in the UK, it's more of a consumer thing. So people who are looking to help their own health are going to get these tests. But in North America, it's actually more clinicians looking for this to be able to offer. So I just thought that was interesting, that there's definitely people out there who are interested, but we're doing it in different ways. So North America is a really big opportunity for clinicians to create a program to offer, because we're already seeing that, like they're already seeing that in the glycan companies, Glycan Age.
So training programs for clinicians?
Not training programs. Well, they do have some training programs for them, but I just was curious who's coming to you and from where. And they said that from the UK and North America and USA, I guess, are the two biggest countries that are interested in doing these genetic marking tests. But in the UK, it's more the actual consumer. So the person doing their own research, going and seeking this test. Whereas in the US, it's more clinicians looking to find out more information so that they can spread it.
That's quite a big difference.
Yeah. I thought that was just a piece of information, but I thought that'd be interesting.
Yeah. I saw the first biohacking shop open in Trafford. I've never seen one in the UK before. On the way to the clinic, there's someone it doesn't look like the kind of place you go into, but...
Interesting.
But it is.
There's an online one as well that we found, because we wanted to see how differently were we doing it, and it's not that different. But what I do know is that at this early stage, hand-holding is required. And I don't think that people are going to go and get the maximum benefit out of just following a protocol on a website and ordering tests and whatever they are with somebody who's actually going to lead them. So I think doing it out the gate the right way is important. So again, it's a wide open niche, wide open currently. And I also want to give the people who are doing this research the will to keep doing it, because they need to know that they're reaching the end user. And I think that's a major disconnect, is that the scientists are doing this amazing work behind the scenes, but who's articulating it through to the masses? And that hole is where we come in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I think that is, like we said before, that's the asset to build, is the ability to actually bring this to market, bring this to patients, better way of phrasing it. Because it's all very well having the goods that are theoretically possible, but it's too complicated. I find it complicated, you know, and there's a lot of unsettled science as well. Mm-hmm. So someone to safely bring it to people in a way they understand, there will be endless work for people who can do that. If you're a clinician and you've just been bitten by the bug and you'd like to know how to implement some of this stuff into your clinic, now is the time to sign up. We've got something very special coming. Make sure you click on the link and get on the waiting list.